One day, each of us will close our eyes for the final time. Our hearts will slowly cease to beat, and our last breath will whisper through silent lips as we leave this existence behind. Yet is this truly the end? Do we simply cease to be as the last spark races from our brains along cooling neurons to its final destination in oblivion? Or does the part of us that is uniquely our own continue beyond the grave? Is there existence beyond the temporal? And if so, what mysteries might that existence hold? There are those who would have us believe that our lives end with our final tomorrow, that the physical world is both our beginning and ultimate end. There are also those who reject this explanation, instead contending that the physical world is simply one aspect of an existence which may stretch on through eternity. For now, we are left to wonder if the strange apparitions are a product of our feverish minds, or if ghosts do haunt the fringes of the material world. The ultimate truth may lie somewhere between, unknown to us until we each pass beyond that veil. And between our searching eyes and that veil lies a path that leads us to the shadows of legend.
Hello, this is Charles Romans with Shadows of Legend. Today we're speaking with Carlo Zuzic from Fremont, Ohio. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing well. I understand that you have a property that might have some paranormal activity to it. Would you mind to give us a little bit of background?
Sure. I just purchased this home just last year in July. And, you know, I live in a small house now. And, you know, being a paranormal investigator myself, I've been to some of the coolest places around, some of the big houses that you see, the Victorian. So I always wanted one, you know?
Yes.
And so I went and looked, you know, I wasn't really shopping around, but this popped up. I usually look on realtor.com, just see what's out there. And this house showed up and I was like, man, that'd be perfect. You know, 5 bedrooms, 4 bathrooms. Not that I really need 4 bathrooms, but it all comes with the property.
Well, yeah, if you've got them, use them though.
I mean, I could always hide in one, right?
Right. Yeah. But,
you know, so I, you know, decided to go look at this house and, you know, I fell in love with it. And so I made an offer on it. The banker told me that the bank won't give me the loan because it needs too much work.
Okay.
So I brushed it off, you know, where I was thinking, you know what, I'll find something else, no big deal. But every day I would drive past this house and just look at it. And it was like, it kept calling me. It was like really weird. So I was like, man, I kept looking on realtor.com and it's still there. And so I decided to call the realtor and say, hey, let me go look at it one more time. I made a cash offer on it, like really low, like almost half of what they were asking for it.
I see.
And the guy accepted it like right away. I was all excited and I got this big house and I wasn't expecting to get everything with it either, though.
Well, now it sounds like the everything is where the story's at.
Yes. So what's really weird was, after I made this offer, this cash offer, I was kind of doubting buying it because it needs windows. It needs some work. I mean, the house isn't a disaster at all. It needs updating, we'll say.
So would you have said that it would be livable, but you'd have to be working on it the whole time? It was one of those situations.
Yeah, I mean, if you walk into one of the bathrooms, it's like you step back into the 70s or the 60s, you know? it needs more modern updating. So I asked the realtor if he could let me in and I could take pictures of the place because I want to get a visual of what it's going to cost me to fix this place.
Understood.
So I remember he let me in. It was in July and I started in the attic and I started snapping photos and I heard somebody coughing. Just I sound like they're coughing up a lung. And I was like, man, I'm thinking to myself, well, my girlfriend don't smoke and I don't know if he does, but you know, he sounds pretty rough. So, you know, I'm snapping photos and I come downstairs and finally when I'm done, I walk out and I was like, I just brought it up. I was like, who's coughing? And they're like, no, nobody's coughing. I go, you guys weren't in the house? And they're like, no, the coffin was coming from the floor below. So, you know, I kind of brushed it off. I think maybe somebody's walking down the sidewalk coughing.
You know, an echo.
I was still focused on this house, you know? And then, so we finally closed on the deal. And the next day after I get the keys, I come into the house by myself and I walked into this dining room area and I'm standing there and I hear somebody walking around upstairs. And I'm like, oh crap, somebody might be in this house, you know? And So I called my girlfriend. I'm like, hey, somebody's walked around in the house. And she's like, well, maybe the guy forgot something. He came back. But I don't remember seeing any cars outside. But so I started yelling up the stairs and nobody's responding. So I go up there and there's nobody in this house anywhere. So being a paranormal investigator, I'm thinking, oh, man, you know, did I just buy a house with a ghost? You know, that was my first thought.
Yes.
So a few days later, I was back at the house and I heard what sounded like a kid talking coming from the upstairs. And I started yelling up, hello, hello, and nobody responded. And say the same night, there was this local paranormal investigator that moved in the area that I knew. And I'm sitting on my couch at my old home and my phone starts dinging and these pictures keep popping up. And he's like, hey, are you home? I'm like, well, yeah, I'm watching TV. Why, what's up? What's all these pictures for? And he's like, are you at your new home? I go, no. He goes, well, there's a guy looking out your top window. And he's trying to snap a photo of a guy looking out the window. And I'm thinking, oh, man, here we go. And, you know, from that point, I had a feeling that there was something going on there, you know, just because I've done it for 17 years myself. You know, I was like, well, I guess I'm going to investigate this place.
But now, if you don't let me interrupt you just a second there, to clarify, you had no inkling of this until after you purchased the home?
After I purchased it, yeah. I heard the coughing, but I kind of brushed it off, you know, thinking maybe it was just somebody walking by outside, you know. Being so focused on the house, I really didn't even have no thought ghosts, you know, paranormal stuff. So, but yeah, so once I got that, you know, my girlfriend and I decided to investigate it. And that evening we were in a basement and she's standing there and she starts freaking out. And I'm like, what? And she's like, well, something just felt like they took their finger and went down my back. And I'm like, oh, man. So later on, we went upstairs and we were sitting there and I asked for somebody to, you know, to knock back. And it was a few minutes later, it goes boom, boom. And I actually ducked. I thought somebody shot a gun off. And I'm like, what the heck was that? And she's freaking out. And it sounded like something just slammed hard, like twice, went boom, boom. I still don't know what it was. You know, I walked around this house. I can't figure it out. So at that point, I knew we had something going on there. I still didn't know no history of this house. You know, I've just purchased this thing. You know, I never really did any research on it. And so I had a couple friends come in. They were investigators also, and they stayed there a few days. And the next day I went there, they're like, hey, man, we were in a basement. We got bit. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And then they're showing me pictures of these bite marks. And I'm thinking, oh, man, this ain't good. You know, that was my first thought.
Now, again, to clarify, what type of bite marks were there?
Both of them got bit on the arm. It looked like you could see like a little mouth bite marks, like teeth marks on their arm.
I see. So, but it was not like an animal bite, though.
No, it was definitely looked like a mouth, you know, a regular mouth. You could see, like, it was more reddish. I mean, it's not like you really indented it, but it looked like the form of a mouth that would have been on their arm. And then they're like, yeah, maybe we heard this woman moaning all night. And I'm like, okay. And then they were telling me that they heard what sounded like a guitar string being played at night. And I'm like, guitar string? And I'm thinking about it, and they played the recording. You could hear like what sounded like a guitar string. And then it dawned on me that the original piano is sitting in the garage. Okay. From the original owner of the house. And I'm like, that sounds more like the piano. And then it made more sense. And then at that point, I knew that we were, you know, that we have spirits in this house.
So now the sound from the piano couldn't have been just from it being old and perhaps malfunctioning, like the harp inside shifting or something along those lines.
You know, it could have been. I mean, I wasn't there to actually witness it and actually walk up to it and look at it. I mean, it's an old 1800s piano just sitting in a garage. I mean, but it was just like you heard one key. It wasn't like it was playing. I wish it would play a tune, right?
Well, then that, at that point, it would become quite obvious.
Yep. But it was just like you heard one note, and then a little later, you heard another, like just, it's just ding, ding, you know, stuff like that. It wasn't like it was playing.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it could have been. But then there's been several teams that came through here that actually had recordings of it doing the same thing.
And that's one of the things I was going to bring up, but you mentioned a recording. Is there somewhere that our listeners could listen to that recording?
I don't have it personally. I would have to get it. The problem is a lot of I've been waiting for a lot of this evidence from people coming in.
Yes.
To send it to me, and I have them try to post. And a lot of them are doing YouTube videos, so I might have some YouTube stuff that might have it on there on my actual website. But
and what you know, is your website, by the way?
What's that?
What is your website? So then that
it is www.hauntedbihl, that's B-I-H-L, manor.com.
Okay. Then that would give our listeners some place to go to check this out if they, you know, if they wanted to.
Yeah, there's several videos I have linked on there where you could watch them, and they may have it on there. I just haven't had time to go through everything. But yeah, so, you know, after I experienced all this stuff, I started doing the research on the house. And, you know, Jerome Bihl was a Toledo native that moved into the Fremont area, and he was a businessman that owned a jewelry store here on Fremont, and he also owned a music shop here in Fremont. And his big thing selling was pianos. And then he did not pass away in the house. He sold it to the Wolf family in 1922. The house was built in 1898. So after they took ownership, Clarence, the husband, he was a granary owner out in Lindsay, which is not far from here. So they were a wealthy family. And it was in 1940, Clarence was walking across the street, got hit by a car. And he did not pass away then, but from that hit, his health started declining, and he died in 1944 in the home. And I have all documentations of it. And then in 1966, Daisy Wolf passed away in the home. Also, she was bedridden for several years, and she did pass away in the home. I was talking to a historian out here, and he told me that I have articles. They actually had funerals being held at this home. Being a prominent family, they would let friends and family use the home for wakes and funerals because if they couldn't afford it, they would let them use the home.
Yes.
They also had their granddaughter come up from Texas that passed away. They brought her up here, and they had her viewing there. So the house was actually used a lot. I know they had a lot of parties there. I've seen articles about parties being held there from the Wolf family. So after Daisy passed away in 1970, the Lucas County Children's Group, which is out of Toledo, purchased the home and made it into a group home for children that are mentally retarded, you know, sick children, and unwanted children, like throwaway kids, troublemakers that the parents didn't want. They would send them to this place. It would start it off with like 8 children in a home. With the last thing I read was up to 25 children were at this house being watched. So
that's a lot, even for a big house.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a huge attic that's, you know, carpeted and all that. And I'm sure they had a lot of beds up there. But, you know, you're cramming. The couple that actually ran it, which were the Kindreds, they were an older couple. And I don't even know how they managed this. But I know they had a live-in nurse that stayed there 24/7 to take care of some of the kids. So I can't find any documentation of kids dying there. They talked to a local historian that told me that he's heard that a boy either committed suicide or had an accidental death in the home, but it's hearsay. I don't even know where to start to find documents, you know, on kids owned by a county. But I know at the age of 17, they were shipped out. They would leave there, and they were probably sent to some mental institution after that point. But yeah, it's kind of a sad story. And then it became a bread and breakfast for a few years. Then a gentleman bought it in 2009, and he lived in it for half a year or to a year. He moved out, and he's owned it till I purchased it, till 2022, and did nothing with this place.
Interesting that he would buy it and then do nothing with it.
Yeah, it's really weird because I did a little research on him, and I found him on Facebook, and I could see him. He's taking photos, you know, standing on a ladder, smiling, painting like he was happy. And I remember a couple of comments like, "Oh, you bought that big house," and then the local neighbors told me that, you know, he was there for a little bit and moved out and kind of just let it go. And they said the grass was real tall. The city had to come out and cut it. And I seen pictures of it, and it looked horrible outside. I mean, it looked like a total vacant disaster, you know? So,
well, if something's left untended, it has tendency to fall apart fairly quickly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was vines growing up the side. They were actually growing into the windows. That's why I'm looking for new windows. It tore up the paint. I mean, it's terrible. But, you know, I kind of knew what I was getting into buying it. you know, I wasn't expecting to adopt a bunch of spirits, but
but from a construction standpoint, you were prepared.
Right. So, you know, just it goes from there. And then now I've had teams come through here and everybody's got a story. I feel like now I'm their voice, you know, I'm their person that's going to tell their story of what happened there. I remember going to a flea market not too far from here, and I was walking around, and this inside this booth, they had these gentlemen were making signs, and I'm thinking, oh, how cool, you know, put the, you know, the Beale Manor sign and made out of wood out front.
Yeah.
So I started talking to him, and he's like, oh, where's this house at? And I told him, and he's like, oh man, I lived right around the corner from that. I'm like, hold on, I need to hear stories. What have you heard about this place? He goes, he's heard that it wasn't such a nice place.
Okay.
So, you know, does that mean they're abusing them? Does that mean were they mistreated? I don't know. I don't know the story to it. But, you know, having that many children there, I'm sure they were neglected. And then I had another woman tell me that her grandparents lived in the house behind it. And they always, when she was little, she would go there and they would always tell her not to go over to that house. So I don't know the whole story behind that. I don't know what was going on.
So there's no real documentation, not like in a lot of cases, like people will investigate closed insane asylums, for instance, and find horrible records of abuse and everything else. But there's nothing definitive there of any kind of abuse.
No, nothing that I found. Like, I wouldn't even know where to go to look for that, you know. But, that, you know, that could have all been washed away, you know, disappeared. But, you know, I personally don't think they were that bad as what you would see at Pennhurst and Westview or Seaview Hospital out in New York, where they were being really mistreated. That was just overwhelming, I think, in that time, you know, back in the 70s and 60s, where they were just crammed in these big buildings and just, you know, this is what you got to work with, you know. But I think this was a little different. But, you know, with the older couple, you know, were they able to handle all that? You know, it's hard to say.
And you're absolutely right. And it could be a question of not necessarily abuse, but neglect, which in itself is a form of abuse.
Right.
And
right.
Then the young people there were in compromised situations anyway.
Right.
So that type of thing has a tendency to, by all accounts, store a certain amount of negative energy. And it's interesting that you didn't, you know, being experienced, you didn't feel any of this before you actually purchased the house and started to do things to it. So why do you think that is?
No, I think I was so focused on the house because, you know, you're looking at this big house, you know, 5 bedrooms, 4 bathrooms, you know, 3 stories, a lot of work, you know.
Yes.
And I think, you know, putting the paranormal investigator part aside of it, which I wasn't even thinking about, you know, using this as a haunted attraction or anything like that.
Right.
I was looking at, because I also collect oddity things, like weird things, like big casket stands and just weird things. I got paintings. I actually own some of Ed Warren's paintings that I wanted to hang up.
Excellent.
I got original blueprints to Pennhurst Asylum and Norwich Hospital. So I collect oddity things, and I'm looking at this house thinking, man, I can hang up all my stuff, you know, and display things, because the house I live in now, you just can't do it. It's too small.
Right.
And so that was my focus, and not thinking about spirits. But after I purchased it, that's when I started getting these weird feelings, like the second floor in this house. I mean, you walk up there, the hair on my arm stands up, and anybody I bring in this house says the same thing. I had Nick Groff here 3 days.
Yes.
He was filming Death Walker. And, you know, I haven't seen the episode yet because it hasn't been released. But, you know, talking to him, he was telling me the same thing. That second floor is like you're walking into a whole different dimension. It has this weird feeling. I mean, you can hear people walking on the carpet. I mean, it's I've seen shadow figures up there. So it's just a whole different feeling on that second floor.
So with your research, were you able to discover what specific thing might have been happening on the second floor?
No, nothing yet. I believe that's probably the area where a lot of the children were. And my theory is you don't have to die at a location to haunt a location. all the energy that's probably been released over the years. I mean, think about, you had sick children, you had unwanted children, so they were angry, not happy. Then you had happy, and then you had, you know, you had everything, just all this energy released in there. And I mean, when you walk into this area, it's just, it's a whole different feeling. I mean, it just sitting up there in by yourself in a quiet area, you hear movement. I've had people chase shadows down the hallway before. I've seen them peek around the corners. I've seen one cross the hallway. I mean, it's just very active up there. And I think that's where a lot of the energy was actually released. And that's where they actually probably hung out and played and did their thing.
Well, you know, anytime you mention, you know, having certain feelings and absorbing the energy of a place, the obvious questions are, were those feelings threatening? Did you ever at any time think you were personally in danger?
No, I've never felt being in danger. Hearing about people being scratched and bitten down in the basement, I was worried about that, because I would never, ever open doors for people to come ghost hunt if I believed there was some sort of demonic there. And talking to, like, even Nick Groff and my girlfriend, she has an autistic kid, and several other people that I've known that had mentally challenged children, what's the common thing they do to get attention? They bite, they scratch, and they pull hair. And that's what happens down in that basement. So as for threatening, no. Do I feel uneasy? Yes. You know, it kind of freaks me out a little bit going in there by myself, because I could hear movement and whatnot. And it's just, I'll go to your house and investigate all day long.
Yes.
But when it happens in your home, well, it's a different story. You know, I'm saying it's like, now I'm living with it, you know.
Right. And you can't go away from it.
Well, now I'm the one dealing with this, you know.
That's a different perspective entirely, I would say.
Absolutely. It is. And I'm starting to get more used to them. You know, I'm feeling more comfortable with them, but it's still weird, you know, walking in a place that you know has many spirits.
Well, I would think that it would be uncomfortable at the least. I'd interviewed a gentleman here in the previous year who compared it to like having a rat in the house. You never get used to it, but not completely used to it, but you almost like you accommodate it. You're not comfortable, but you know it's there and you deal with it.
Yep.
Do you think that is an accurate assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. I mean, you know, I feel like now I'm their storyteller. I feel like maybe now they're going to use me to tell their story. And I'm hoping, you know, to get, you know, having people come through here, you know, getting some evidence. We've came up with a name, Steve. He's 15 years old.
Okay.
I believe that may be the boy that committed suicide or had that accidental death. We've, you know, that name's came up many times there. Plus, we're getting other names now, too. So hopefully I could build a story and find out, you know, who these kids were and what happened there. That'd be awesome just to, you know, be able to do that for them.
It would be. And if you could gather information that would help you do further research, because you had mentioned earlier that it was difficult to find information about certain things and you were operating on hearsay on some stuff.
Sure. You know, and, you know, again, I don't even know. I guess one day I'm going to have to take a trip to Toledo, which is like, you know, maybe 40 minutes away from here.
Yes.
And, you know, just maybe go to the courthouse or maybe to their main office and just see if I can find some information or names of people that were here. You know, I don't know if they'll release that. You know, I've never really dealt this far in depth with a situation like this. So I don't know how far I could get, you know, just by asking questions, but I'm going to have to take a day off of work one day and just kind of go up there and hang out and maybe do some research. Maybe they'll give me some books I could look at or something where maybe I could find who some of these spirits really are.
And it may prove difficult, because a lot of times any records about juveniles are locked and sealed and you're not given access. So it would be a difficult endeavor there at best.
Right.
So I have to ask you, Do you plan to move into this house when you get everything fixed?
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure yet. I've talked to a local historical society out here, and, you know, I mentioned, you know, would they be interested in having this building? And they told me that they can't take on something that needs work. And if a historical society were to purchase it, they could only purchase it for the price I paid for it, not what I put into it. So I'm thinking, you know, over the years, if I generate enough money that paranormal teams come through here, that the, you know, the work I put into it, I'm not losing anything from that.
I see.
So I would sign it over to them, but in the deal would be that they would have to have at least 100 years worth of ghost hunts allowed. They can't just take over a building and say, okay, no more ghost hunting now that we own it, because really the ghost hunters are really the ones paying for the renovations. So it wouldn't be fair just to take that away from people. So that'd be something I would consider, or maybe making it like into bread and breakfast type deal. So I'm kind of up in the air with it at this moment, you know, like what I want to actually do with it.
One thing that I'll mention, and that has absolutely nothing to do with spirits, is that when a historical society gets involved in order for something to be put on the historical register, then any repairs done have to be done with the materials that were used when it was built for it to qualify. So you may want to check into that.
You're right. You're right. And I've heard that. So this building hasn't been registered as a historical society or a historical building. So I wouldn't do it myself, because, I mean, I'm looking at, say, $15,000 in windows now. Could you imagine going them using the original materials? You're probably looking at $30,000 for windows.
It would be
quite extensive,
I would say.
Yeah. So, you know, right now I'm just kind of up in the air with it. And, you know, I'm letting teams come in and investigate it and, you know, give them a new place to do some research in.
So now, are these paranormal teams, are you charging them to do this, or are they charging to take people on ghost hunts? How does this all work?
Right now, I just have it set up where a team could book a night investigating. So the weekends, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights, it's $225 up to five people. If you bring more, it's $45 a person. Then Monday through Thursday, it's $175 a night up to five people, and then $35 a person, any additional person after that. So I'm trying to keep the price low. I know a lot of places are getting expensive, but, you know, I remember complaining about, you know, going some places, going, man, they're charging so much for this ghost hunt, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, here and now I own this place, and now I see why. Just
exactly.
The upkeep.
Right, and know, this is true,
insurance,
too.
Heat, electric. I mean, it's crazy, you know, and now I see why they're charging this $400 or $500 a night, because it gets expensive to run these places. And so, but yeah, I do have it open for paranormal teams to come in. I haven't held any events there or anything like that as of right now. You know, I'm just letting teams enjoy it and see what they come up with.
See, that was another thing I was wanting to clarify, too, you know, for the listener's benefit, is this isn't, you're not billing this as a haunted house. This isn't something where people are dressed up or anything like that. You're just
making it
available for people to come in and see if they can pick up any paranormal activity like other people have.
Right. This is strictly just, you know, paranormal activity. There's nobody dressed up as a ghoul jumping out behind the wall.
It's true, yes. And the reason I ask is because these are questions people will ask.
Absolutely. This is strictly just for paranormal research.
Now, what kind of feedback have you gotten from your, other than, you know, the videos and things of that nature, what kind of feedback have you gotten from the people that have went on these ghost hunts?
I've had some really good teams come through there. Everybody has a little bit of a story to tell, and this is kind of an interesting one. I remember, so when I first got this house, it was about a month or two into it, I came in through the front door, and when you open the door, the landing is right in front of you, the stairs and the landing.
Yes.
So I opened the door, and as I glanced up, I thought I seen a boy standing there, and I looked back real quick, and it wasn't there. And I'm thinking, ah, man, I'm just freaking myself out. You know, just, you know, do your thing and get out of here. So, you know, I brushed it off. I never really told anybody's story. I thought it was just my imagination. And it was about 2 months after that, I had a team there. And I have a journal that I leave on the table, and I have everybody write their stories in, which if I go through it, it's really cool, some of the experiences. And in this way, maybe I could build that story just by, hey, we saw the name Steve pop up, and then another person says the same thing. So this lady wrote in there that while she was in the attic, she saw a boy step into the doorway, and he had red hair, and he disappeared. But I never told the story, but the boy I seen on the landing had red hair, a white shirt, and a black suit on, is what I saw.
That's an interesting confirmation of that.
Yep. So she kind of validated, maybe I really did see this boy standing there. But the feedback has been really good. You know, everybody shares some of their stories with me. Some people send me their evidence. And if you go on my Facebook page, I try to post as much things, you know, that people share. I remember I had this one lady there. We were doing the tour, and there was footprints in the carpet. And I snapped photos of that, and I put it on there. You could see the little toes and the feet. It was like 7 inches long. So, yeah, anything I get, you know, I try to post on there to share with everybody else.
If you don't mind, could you share that Facebook link with us again?
Yeah, it's Haunted Beale Manor. If you look it up on Facebook, and if you Google that, I mean, it should pop right up. I'm the only Haunted Beale Manor on there.
Excellent. As I said before, in case some of our listeners want to follow up and check on some things.
Sure. I can also send you the link, too, and if you want to put it on the page.
Okay. I would appreciate that. So where are you going moving forward?
Right now, I'm concentrating on the renovations. I want to get those windows put in. This summer, we're painting the house on the outside. I got to get the ceiling of the porch fixed because it got waterlogged and put a hole in the porch, so I'm getting new lights put up there. I just fixed the steps. I fixed the garage roof. So I'm kind of focusing. Any money I get, I put directly back into that house. Once the outside's kind of done, I'm going to focus on the inside. I'm going to start upstairs with the bathrooms and kind of work my way down and try to get everything in tip-top shape and go from there.
Do you think that the activity, the renovations, stir up the other activity and increase it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would definitely will. I mean, you're changing a place that looks like it's been there from the 70s. You know, they're used to that look. But, you know, I'm going to try to focus on that because it needs work. I mean, you can't leave something sit there and be stale. You know, like the bathrooms upstairs, you can't even use them because they're just so bad. And, you know, I don't want to leave it like that. You know, I want to make it look better. So I'm hoping they may get active, but I'm hoping they all understand, look, I'm trying to fix this up so it works again, you know?
Yes.
So that's my concern. You know, is it going to stir up activity? Are they going to get angry? I don't know. I'm hoping not, but I'm going to try to explain it. You know, when you're working with the spirits, I'm just going to say, look, I'm trying to make this a better home, you know, getting everything in a place. So hopefully they'll understand.
Now, if someone wanted to reach out to you and ask you a question or offer some sort of advice or anything, would Facebook be the best way to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. You can instant message me right on Facebook. You can shoot me an email, go on my website. There's a contact on there. You can shoot me an email. I have a hotline number that's also on my Facebook. You can call or text. So there's many ways to get in touch with me.
So sort of a final question here I have to ask you. You're buying a house to fix up and live in, and then you find out that it's haunted. I mean, what are your whole thoughts on this?
You know, I never thought it would happen to me. And that's the truth. I mean, I never had that thought. And now I see how, you know, just an average person that I used to help got in that situation. You know, they bought this house and they move in. Next thing you know, they see the soldier walking by or whatnot. And, you know, you hear these stories from these people. And, you know, I believe what I hear, you know, when a client talks to me about it. So here's me now in that same situation, you know, I got this house with spirits in it. I'm hoping that over time I'll get used to them you know, and they'll get used to me. I know I had a team here, and I remember the gentleman, I was doing the tour in the beginning, kind of give him an idea where the hot spots are and stuff. And one of the gentlemen ran off, and we were going up in the attic, and he never came up there. So when we came down, he goes, "Man, I seen a shadow run across the hallway," and he chased after it. And he had a recorder, and he goes, "Was that you I saw?" And on the recording, you hear, "Whatever." Then he goes, "Do you like Carlo?" And it goes, "Yes." So I started feeling a little more comfortable here. And I've had other teams come in there and ask them about, you know, ask the spirits if they like me. And they'd say yes. So I'm starting to feel a little more comfortable being around them. But it's going to take time, you know, I mean. And we'll see what happens over that period. And hopefully I'll get used to them. And maybe, you know, they'll get used to me and not bother me. And I'm going to leave, like, even when I do renovate, I'm going to leave the attic as is. So that could be their space, and I won't change that. And I'm going to explain that to the spirits too. Hey, you could have the attic. You could, you know, it's up there for you. I'll even put beds up there for them if they want. just don't bother me downstairs.
So do you still actively go out on ghost hunts, or is your own house enough, I guess, hunting for you?
No, I do both. You know, I still help clients when they call. We still, you know, do our thing. And this place is obviously keeping me busy, but I will never turn my back on a client. So, you know, if anybody had paranormal activity happening, they contact me. I try to help them no matter what.
So you could even just swap stories of interaction with the spirit world.
Sure. I mean, you know, now I'm living with it, and now you know what they're actually going through. So yeah, it's a lot easier to help them, but you know, I'll never ever, you know, turn away from being a paranormal investigator. I love doing it. I've been doing it for 17 years. You know, I've been fortunate, you know, to do a lot. I did a lot of television stuff. I've been on Haunted Case Files and Travel Channel, Animal Planet's The Haunted. I mean, I've done a lot of that, Japanese TV. So I had a lot of great opportunities doing it. And, you know, I love the field. I love the research. You know, I love helping people and try to get them over that hump of their situation. So I love it. You know, this, it's in me forever.
It sounds like you're very determined to stay in the field.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll never walk away from it.
So is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners?
No, if you have time, you know, if you guys want to check out the place, you know, message me and we could, you know, check out the calendar. I have openings, and they want to book something, just, you know, let me know. And if it's not my place, there's a lot of other cool places out there to check out, you know. And if you're into the paranormal, definitely check out some of these hot locations that are in Ohio. Ohio has a lot of them. So, you know, you have Madison Seminary, Mansfield Prison. I mean, there's a lot of cool places to check out. And I think a lot of people are doing really good stuff with it, too.
That's good to know.
Yep.
Well, I want to say thank you on behalf of myself and our audience here for taking the time to come on here and discuss your experiences. And hopefully we'll have you back on again soon as we get updates about your spiritual property, we'll say.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. And yeah, definitely. If you want to get an update, just hit me up and we'll do some updating.
I appreciate it. Well, in that case, you have a wonderful evening.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Charles Romans, and on behalf of myself and our guests, thank you for joining us on this walk through the shadows of legend. If you like what you heard, please follow us and visit our website at shadowsoflegend.com and support our Patreon page to help keep the content flowing. And if you would like to be a guest and share your own brush with a stranger paranormal, don't hesitate to email us and include a contact number. The strange and surreal, the normal and the paranormal are all aspects of the world in which we live. As you reflect upon the stories we have shared, keep in mind that the people sharing these stories are actual, real people just like us. Were the stories shared compelling enough to be given credibility, or should they be relegated to the deeper part of the shadows? But when determining this, it might be a good idea to keep an open mind, because when we look around, we might discover that our own world is less brightly lit than we once thought. Until next time, I'll be waiting for you in the shadows of legend.